to the Rotoscopers Podcast, Episode 7, Rango, the Creepy Critters.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with over 100,000 downloadable titles to choose from. For the listeners of the Rotoscopers Podcast, that's you. Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial. Personally, I love audiobooks. I listen to them all the time. I listen to them in the car, when I'm jogging, 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there. And it's a great way just to listen to the books that you've always wanted to listen to, but you never think that you have time. I listen to about a book or two a week, and it's definitely thanks to Audible that helps me. The great thing about Audible is that you get to keep the books. They're yours forever. You don't have to give them back. It's not like when the 30 days is up, your book suddenly disappears. It's yours. You get to keep it. It's incredible. I love it. And I know you will too. So for a free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/therotoscopers.
Welcome to the Rotoscopers Podcast, an animation podcast for animation addicts, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. And I am your host, Chelsea Robson, the rootinest, tootinest cowgirl in the Wild Wild West, along with Morgan Burt.
The magnificent, marvelous, Madam Morgan.
And Mason Smith.
And I'm Mason Smith. In the West, known as the armed and dangerous, stagecoach hijacking, pig stealing, law defying, devilishly handsome, wanted outlaw, Laredo Smith.
Thank you.
Where'd the harmonica come from?
I have a harmonica, right?
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, well, I thought it'd be a good touch. Thanks for sharing.
Oh, man. This week has been a fantastic week in the world of animation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Morgan and I, we had the opportunity to watch a documentary called The Sweatbox, and it was about the making of The Kingdom of the Sun, a.k.a. The Emperor's New Groove.
Did you watch that, Mason?
No, I didn't check it out.
You missed out because Seriously. This is a only twice-released documentary. It was actually made by Sting's wife because Sting wrote a lot of the songs for Kingdom of the Sun, and a lot of them got cut, so only a few made it into Emperor's New Groove. So anyways, Sting's wife was commissioned by Disney to make this documentary about the making of the film, and of course, midway through, things changed and got thrown out, and it didn't quite turn the way they wanted it. So pretty much this is a documentary Disney does not want you to see. It definitely paints a bad light on about all the bureaucracy of making animated films and how structured and corporate it is, especially in the Disney company. And it was on YouTube for a few days and then mysteriously taken down.
Yeah.
So
I woke up one morning, I was looking through my Facebook, and I saw that a friend of mine had just posted, and I was like, oh, that looks cool, I'll watch it. And I sent it to Morgan. I probably should have sent it to you, I'm sorry. But it was an eye-opener. It was supposed to be like the next Lion King. It was by the director of The Lion King. Like, it started out being him, and it was supposed to be his next epic that they were going to do. And so they had lots of different music from lots of different types of music.
Yeah, genre, yeah.
Yeah, just many different genres that they played into this. And I was really impressed with the whole thing. But it really, it changed. And, you know, you can kind of see the reason as far as if the story doesn't quite hit it out of the park, you're going to want to save your money and you're going to want to fix things too. But It was really kind of sad how it worked out that way.
Yeah, as I was watching this, it was like an hour and a half?
Mm-hmm.
It was fascinating, but at the same time, really depressing. Like, it was so sad because they did interviews with the director and different animators who'd worked so hard on characters that got cut. And you just felt for these guys. They'd already spent 2 or 3 years in development. The reason it's called The Sweatbox is because that's where you take your film periodically and it gets reviewed by the heads of the studio. And they really, like, the iron fist comes crashing down, or they give it a lot of praise and you keep going. And unfortunately for them, they, you know, there was all this buildup. They were really excited to go to The Sweatbox, and it just got slammed after slam after slam after slam. And they completely had to rework the plot. It was supposed to be this grand, epic tale, you know, there was a creation story in there. And what it came down to is that the heads of the studio thought it followed the Disney mold too much. It was a good movie, but it was just kind of too Disney in a way. And so, definitely see the transition to what became Emperor's New Groove, which was completely off the wall, different for Disney.
Yeah.
I know Kingdom of the Sun would have been a good movie, and a lot of people would have preferred that version, but Emperor's New Groove in its own right is an amazing film.
It is.
So,
here.
I'm sorry you guys can't watch it. I mean, you can. I did read on the YouTube comments before it was taken down that someone put it on, like, BitTorrent. So if you're desperate to watch it, then go and do those things. But I did not tell you to do this and didn't hear it from us. But
you didn't see anything. Well, my animation world has been pretty busy and stressful. I'm currently working hard on my application to BYU Animation.
Yay.
coming up in June.
That's coming up soon.
Yeah, don't remind me. Tell me something I don't know. I've been working on sketchbooks. I've been working on figure drawing. I've been working on 3D graphics projects. And I really haven't had time to watch much animation.
But you are animation.
I guess so. I just hope I get in. So, yeah, that's kind of been my life for the past couple of weeks.
Cool.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
So let's move forward to the news. We have three main news stories today, keeping it short and real. You know, we don't want to waste too much of your time, but it's not waste because it's animation and it's awesome. Am I right?
You're right.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're right.
So,
and you know what? When you're right, you're right.
I know this already. Okay, so our first news story, and this definitely has taken the animation world by storm, is Glenn Keane left Disney after nearly 38 years at the studio.
Oh, holy cow.
So, Glenn Keane, for those of you who don't know, he is the legendary animator who did Aladdin, Ariel, and Tarzan. He's kind of an animation god to a lot of people. On a Friday, he wrote this letter, and it got sent to his colleagues, and what he said is, after long and thoughtful consideration, I have decided to leave Disney Animation. I am convinced that animation really is the ultimate art form of our time, with endless new territories to explore. I can't resist its siren call to step out and discover them.
Huh.
So, I mean, first off, being at the same company for 38 years, no matter who you are and what industry you're in, is a long time. Not now, I think so much it's the norm just to switch companies every few years and kind of, it's not like the olden days where you stay with the same company, but for him to have stayed with it since the 70s, and through its goods and its bads. I feel like he went through the 80s, which was a rough period. The 90s were great, and then middle 2000s, early 2000s, where it definitely struggled, and he was still there. It shows a lot for who he is and how much he supported this company.
Yeah.
So here's some of the characters he worked on. As an assistant animator, he worked on Penny and Bernard from The Rescuers. He worked on Elliot the Dragon from Pete's Dragon. Later, as not an assistant animator, but as a regular animator, he worked on The Bear in Fox and the Hound, Giant from Mickey's Christmas Carol. Oh, I love that guy.
I love him.
He did Ilanwi and Gurgi from The Black Cauldron, Radigan and Fidget from The Great Mouse Detective.
Fidget.
Fagin, Skykes, Jenny, and Georgette from Oliver and Company.
Oh, I love it.
Ariel from the... This is when he kind of hit his big time. Ariel and the Little Mermaid. Marahute and Cody from Rescuers Down Under. Beast from Beauty and the Beast. Aladdin from Aladdin. Pocahontas from Pocahontas. Tarzan from Tarzan. Man, just big string of just title characters. John Silver from Treasure Planet. And lastly, Rapunzel from what would have been called Rapunzel, but got changed to Tangled.
So you're basically saying he's a pretty big deal.
Yes.
All right. Just making sure.
It's a pretty sad day to see him leave, but I'm excited to see what he does next. I think of Don Bluth, who in the early 80s, he went out and did his own studio along with Jeffrey Katzenberg, who started DreamWorks Animation, and those guys both went on to do amazing things. So, I mean, they were talented, connected, well-known, admired, and successful, and he's all those things and more. 38 years at Disney to prove himself. I don't think he's going to have a problem with what he does next. So that leads to the question, what do you think he's going to do next? Switch to a rival studio, start his own, do a feature film, do cartoons. I have a feeling that he might not go to a rival studio. I mean, the way he mentions there's new territories to explore, which makes me think that there's something different that he's interested in doing. So it'll be cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so here's our mini nerdy couch discussion for the day. Who is your favorite Glenn King character that he did?
I'm torn between the Beast from Beauty and the Beast and Tarzan. I love Tarzan because he's really cool. And his, like in Tarzan, in the movie, Tarzan's like animation and his movements are so different from his other human counterparts because he was raised by apes. So I thought that was really creative. I also like the Beast. For everyone who's heard episode one, you know my stance on the Beast. I think he's a fascinating individual. So I'm kind of torn between Beast and Tarzan. Probably Tarzan more.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that one. As much as I like Aladdin and The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast, I think just like fine wine, it gets better with age. And I think he got better and better and better. And I think Tarzan was kind of the pinnacle. Not saying he's gone downhill, but Tarzan really stands out to me as an amazing feat in animation for 2D animated characters and for him.
First off, this is not my absolute favorite character, but I think right now, just because I'm digging on Bette Midler, I really love the character Georgette from Oliver and Company. Like, she's just a great all-around character. He's just done everything, and so he can do anything that he wants.
Yeah.
Just a quick bit of news here. At the beginning of this month, they released the book, The Art of the Secret World of Arrietty. It's got your concept art, your layouts, your stills from the movie, all of the art from that film. I remember thumbing through the Art of Spirited Away years ago, same studio, and it was awesome. Blew me away. And you gotta love those Japanese animation art books.
That's actually one of my, like, I have a bucket list of 100 things. This is really, like, a dumb thing to have on the list, but one of my goals is to have the art of Secret World of Arrietty, the art of Aladdin, the art of Pocahontas, to have a whole collection of all of those books.
That'd be awesome.
Isn't that cool? Yeah. So I don't own any yet. One day I'll get, they're so expensive, but yeah, I tell people like an easy Christmas gift, you can get me this, but it never happens. So it might take me a while to get this collection.
Might. Yeah.
So anyways, especially since now some of them are out of print. So like price keeps going up, up and up, like, oh,
cha-ching.
Yeah. Okay. Our last bit of news, trailers, trailers, trailers. This is the week of the trailers. So, we're going to talk about three trailers that we got, which were kind of like first glimpses. We'd see production stills before, but this was the first trailer of each one of these. So, first one, there's a new Tinkerbell film, fifth in the series, called Secret of the Fairy Wings.
Sweet.
essentially what it is Tinkerbell. She goes off into this forbidden part of the woods, which is called the Winter Woods, you know, because she, Tinkerbell and her friends, they're all spring fairies, and they deal with the flowers and making things grow. So there's this other side of the world where it's all about winter. So they, Tinkerbell just can't help herself, and she just goes and can't resist its call. And she meets a new fairy and then discovers the secret of the fairy wings, whatever that is. Yeah, this is, I've only seen the first and third Tinkerbell film. I do want to see more. I've just never gotten around to it. I don't know. These films look, they're pretty standard, direct-to-video. Like, obviously, this franchise is a big moneymaker for them, so that's why they keep pumping it out. So that's why they keep making more. But one thing, like, one plus about these is at least the animation's really pretty. So
it's true. Hey, Morgan, was it this movie? Okay, this is a really funny story about us. My sister, she has Down syndrome, and she loves watching movies. One of her favorite things. Every week, my mom basically buys her a new movie. So we have a lot of movies here. And
I come to Chelsea's house to rent films. Not even kidding.
No, not at all. One time, we were coming, she came over to do something. I was upstairs, and she was downstairs with Marissa, and we had, there was this, the Disney Movie Club magazine that was on this counter, and she starts talking to Marissa, and she's like, "Hey, Marissa, have you seen this, the Tinkerbell movies?" "No, I haven't." "Oh, you should." It's like, at this point, I'm walking down the stairs, and I'm overhearing her. I'm like, "Morgan!"
Well, that's the thing. Like, I knew that Marissa got a new movie every week, so I might as well, like, push her to get one that I wanted to see. And then, of course, I get caught. Good times.
That was awesome.
I wish I still had that gusto about the new ones that I did for that very first one that came out that I was so intrigued. Yeah. Maybe I should convince Marissa to get it. Yeah. It comes out in October, so it'll be a while. But
hey, miss. Hey. Oh, okay.
Okay. Did you have any thoughts on it, Mason?
Yeah, I just thought it was pretty. I mean, it was cool. I haven't really gotten into the whole Tinkerbell films. I don't know why I haven't.
Oh, really? Me either. It seems like your type.
Hey, well, you know.
The next one was Hotel Transylvania. So in this trailer, we got to see Count Dracula. He owns a hotel where these monsters can rest in peace, as they say, and they come and they can rest from all troubles and cares. So it shows them what's going on in the hotel, and then this little boy, Johnny, comes up and he discovers the secret of the monsters, and that's about it in this trailer. Personally, it still looks very meh to me. I'm not super intrigued by this trailer, but yeah, what do you think?
I don't know. I thought it looked pretty funny. I was like, hey, I'd like to see this.
Yeah, it looked okay to me. I don't know. I don't know what to say. It's just kind of a quick look. I did notice that Adam Sandler's voice for Dracula sounded a lot like the voice of Gru by Steve Carell in Despicable Me.
Oh.
To me, it's kind of similar.
Yeah.
I was like, well, all right.
I'll take it. Okay, last one was DreamWorks Animation's Rise of the Guardians. Actually, after seeing this trailer, my opinion changed. Remember one of our first episodes, or episode 3, we got the movie poster, and it showed more of the characters in who they were. And I remember saying that, yeah, they look very blah, very generic, like any studio could do this. But after seeing the trailer, I stand corrected. I think that the characters, they're darker than what you would typically imagine for your, you know, beloved childhood legends, but at the same time, they feel loving and trustworthy. I mean, like, Santa is this big brute with tattoos who's like a biker dude. Definitely a different side of Santa we haven't seen before. He's definitely like, you know, your bodyguard type of character. Yeah, the trailer piqued my interest for this film. I'm a lot more interested in it now than I was before, so that's a big yay moment. out of these three trailers, this is the one I'm most anticipating.
Yeah, I think so too. Rise of the Guardians, it's definitely got like a darker tone to it. And yeah, you're right. Santa's like this like burly Russian guy. And but I think it'll be cool. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm looking forward to it more now that I've seen the trailer and kind of seen the motions and the atmosphere of the film. So yeah, looks pretty intriguing.
I'm kind of the opposite. As we discussed, and as you probably all can notice, I am really a fan of my childhood view of the world. Going back to our discussion on Rockadoodle, I like my things the way they are. And I've created a nice little world where all these characters live, you know, where Santa is nice and happy-go-lucky and big bowl full of jelly.
Coca-Cola Santa?
Exactly. These are the things that I put in, and the whole dark to it just scares me, so I don't know what to think. We'll see. I'll probably end up seeing it. If not, Marissa will bring it home. I'll probably see it then. So, but that's what I got out of it.
Cool.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Welcome, amigo, to the land without end. The desert and death are the closest of friends.
So this week for our nerdy couch discussion, I, Mason Smith, I've been thinking about this a lot. I've been thinking about the principle of character appeal and animation. I really wanted to explore that on this podcast. And so I just have a couple of questions. You know how we have spoiler alerts? This is going to be a Mason alert because you're about to hear me get kind of passionate about this. So just know.
Mason jumps on his soapbox.
No, I have to be more dignified. I just kind of stride up my cape with sword drawn.
He asserts his throne.
Here's my question, animated world and rotoscopers. So do y'all ever notice how animated character design has changed over the years? Mainly looking at the differences between earlier and later versions or cartoons of the same franchise. I'm going to name some examples, but what I've noticed is that nowadays animators are going for a more edgier, kind of sleek, more modern look for audiences. Let me show you what I'm talking about. Ninja Turtles, comma, the Teenage Mutant.
Okay, so, yes.
So I gave y'all some links to study, and I hope you did your homework. And I'm talking about the Ninja Turtles then, back in the early 90s, you know, late 80s, and then the reboot or the revamp series that they started in 2003.
I remember that. I actually remember both of them.
Big difference. And I've seen both. I'm a huge fan of the old one, and I've seen maybe one or two episodes of the new one. The first thing I thought when I saw the 2003 version was like, whoa, like they turned the Ninja Turtles into like killer turtles. What do y'all think? Because you've seen how it changes, right?
Yes. And it kind of reminded me of, like, Batman. You look at Batman over the years, like, even from the 60s, they had a certain Batman had a look. And then every 10 years or so, they put out a new Batman. Yeah. And I remember even when it went into, like, the Batman Beyond, and that was, like, very futuristic. I love that one. I was okay with it. But there are some that really kind of bug me. I would say that the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the newer one, I didn't like. I didn't particularly enjoy that one as much as the older one. But then that could have been just my bias on the old one.
And because maybe you weren't 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anymore.
Yeah.
I like what Chelsea said. Styles, they've changed. You know, if you look at all the Hanna-Barbera cartoons in the 60s, they all look the same. They all had the same, like, way of animation and side-scrolling. And then it switched. In the 80s and 90s, I think it's a lot more true to anatomy and the comic book style, which some of those cartoons are based off. And then late 90s, 2000s, it was a huge shift. I think of Genndy Tartakovsky. He came around in the late 90s with Powerpuff Girls, and I remember how completely different Powerpuff Girls looked compared to everything. Yeah. A lot of his stuff has this very stylized look to it. I think of Samurai Jack, which he did, Dexter's Lab, and the first...
Personal favorite?
The first edition of The Clone Wars.
Before it was all VeggieTales. Like,
yeah, the... well... yeah, the first two seasons, which were amazing. I haven't followed the new ones, but his style definitely, I think, represents this shift in animation, where it's slick lines, very minimalist color. You know, it's, we're not trying to work on the shading. It's just this character has one color, maybe one shading right here. Very simple in my mind. To me, it's probably like easier to animate. It's probably cheaper. Obviously, things have changed with computer helping a lot in animation now, but
it's kind of sad, I think, because I mean, I think back to one of my absolute favorite cartoons is Masters of the Universe, He-Man. Awesome. For me, it kind of takes a bit of the edge away. It's like, oh, well, whatever.
Yeah. I think of the Hanna-Barbera cartoons where they weren't full animation to kind of cut corners. All the characters had to have necklaces or shirt lines or something around their neck. So that way they only had to animate the top head talking and the sleeve from the neck down the same. Or if like they were walking, they just left the head and then they just had the walk cycle of the body. I mean, that has nothing to do with style, but that's like something they did.
Morgan, you just ruined Hanna-Barbera for me.
Sorry.
What mainly is bothering me is, you know, the design and the anatomy of these characters and how it's changing. And I'm not saying it's totally a bad thing. Look at Ninja Turtles. The comics, I think, were closer to the 2003 version of the cartoon. And then they did the 2007, the CG film, TMNT, which I really enjoy because they can accomplish a lot more comic book action with the more sleek character designs. And I think they look more like teenagers than the kind of bulbous character designs that we had, you know, back in the 80s.
Yeah.
But in some cases, I don't like it. Like, I understand that you have to simplify your pipeline, and when you're working on animation, you have to make things, you know, cost-effective. Look at the X-Men, and this is where I'm about to get my pash on. I have been watching the X-Men animated series on Netflix Watch Instantly for a while, and man, I just love it. I actually saw the live-action movies before I started watching these old cartoons again. And I'm not a big proponent of the movies. But talking animation, back then, like, I thought it was great. Sure, the animation looked awkward because maybe techniques weren't as refined back then. But the costumes and the body proportions and everything was so faithful to the comics that it was like I was watching the comics, but it was a kid's show, you know?
Yeah,
and
totally.
I think maybe kids loved that because they didn't have to go to the comic book store to see these characters come to life anymore. And then they did a bunch of revamp series. They did X-Men Evolution, and they did another one. I think it was a kind of a mini-series where Wolverine is the leader and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So look at the X-Men then and look at them now. I don't like it. I think it was because they're so authentic to the comic book look. Take one of my favorite Marvel characters ever, Sabretooth. He's a big bad guy. He's like the complement of Wolverine. Wolverine is kind of short and ferocious. Sabretooth is giant and hulking and ferocious.
Yeah.
Okay, so I showed you guys pictures of Sabretooth then and now. So Sabretooth back in the day, like he looked like he does in the comic. You know, he's not very realistic looking, but he fits his character. He's huge and ferocious. So I sat down about 3 years ago and watched Hulk versus Wolverine with my buddy Dustin, who's a big comic book fanatic. And as soon as Sabretooth showed up on screen, we both went, "Oh." They ruined him. They totally ruined him. And so I guess what I'm talking about is that it works for some cartoons, I guess, when it kind of fits their role and it fits the overall like tone of what the original source material is supposed to be. But I think that the oversimplification of some of these character designs is a bad thing. And it makes me wonder where character design is going in animation.
Yeah. Okay. I need to play devil's advocate right here because you were mentioning how much you love the comic book style and you'd prefer it to stay true to comic books. Well, since we all have Netflix, we seem to peruse quite a bit and stumble upon some very strange things. Okay? That being said, there is a show on Netflix. It's called The Astonishing X-Men Gifted. Probably the creepiest thing I've ever seen. Essentially, all it is they took frames from the comic books and animated those. I will put a link somewhere on the show notes so you can see this, but it's so creepy because it's just a still image, and then they animate it by slowly moving the head, and that's the only part that moves, or the mouth just creepily moves up and down. It's so disturbing to me. Yuck, I don't like it. I love X-Men. I'm a huge fan. Over Christmas, I watched all the X-Men with my brother. The original, well, not the original, but the 90s version. Loved it. Loved every moment of it. You know, like you said, the animation's not perfect, but it does its job. But this was just, and this was from the actual comics, and I still hated it. Ugh, I couldn't finish it. So it's kind of the other side of being too true, I guess.
Okay, here's the thing, though. Astonishing X-Men Gifted is called a motion comic. So you know the difference, right?
I don't know.
Oh, why?
Okay, well, I mean, I'm looking at some thumbnails on YouTube because I have to say I haven't seen this yet. I saw it on Netflix, but I was like, oh, it's a motion comic. I don't really want to get into that. So a motion comic is one thing. It's like you just said, Morgan. It's literally taking panels from the comic book and giving them kind of minimal animation to give it just enough animation to not make it look like, okay, I'm just thumbing through a comic book on my TV. It's definitely one of those hybrid animation forms where you're getting the old feel of looking at a comic book, but you don't have to read the lines because they're saying the lines.
Yeah.
So I can see where your frustration is. And I know you're playing devil's advocate, but my counterattack would be that the X-Men, I mean, animated series was a cartoon and this is a motion comic, and it's not the same thing.
Apples and oranges.
Apples and oranges. So yeah, that's a good question. Astonishing X-Men Gifted, it's a motion comic. That's a little too much like a comic book. At that point, I think I'd just like to pick up a comic book and read it. And so going back, I mean, there's tons of examples. There's, the Hanna-Barbera cartoons. There's even Dexter's Lab. The newer seasons they got some new animators or something, or they tried to do some new series. And Dexter's Lab got an even more sleek and edgier look than it did. And they also got different voice actors, and I didn't like it.
Never a good thing.
And then you get difficulties when you try to cross from 3D animation to 2D animation. The one that comes to mind is the Buzz Lightyear Star Command cartoon. I don't know. I guess it just comes with the difficulty of converting it to 2D. But I didn't like that either.
Yeah, I think a lot of these just go back to budget, especially the ones where they have a TV series spinoff from the show. I mean, you have a blockbuster budget, and then you go to TV series budget and production schedule, which is just like through the pipeline, bust them out. So they need to do things as quickly, as fast and cheaply as they can. So, I mean, I'll cut them some slack for that.
My bottom line is, I don't know what the ratio is, like 50-50 or what, but some of this newer, not cheaper, but newer, flashier, edgier character design works. Because I like Dexter's Lab. I can't think of it with any other animation style. And as much as I don't like the content of the new Ninja Turtles series, I like the appeal of their character design a little better. And then, of course, you've got, Pixar that has its own character design, mostly for humans, and that's always appealing, even though, in The Incredibles, Bob Parr, his upper body would completely crush his lower body. But I guess that's all about giving the illusion of life and not recreating life. And so I get the argument that, you want to have that abstraction because, you've got to simplify your characters. You can't draw them super realistic. You might as well just watch a live action movie. But I think some of these cartoons, the edgier character designs take away from the appeal because they were meant to be something more fleshed out and more dynamic. Cough, cough, X-Men. So, maybe I'm just bitter about what they did to Sabretooth. I didn't like him in the live-action movies either, but maybe that's just put me over the edge as far as, how passionate I'm getting about this. But I don't want to be all negative about it, because sometimes it works, but sometimes it doesn't. That's all I got to say about it.
Yeah. So, for our listeners, if you have opinions on this and you've been shouting to yourself or into your iPod, just send us an email. Let us know your thoughts. How do you feel about character design and character appeal and how it's changed over the years? So just send us an email at therotoscopers@gmail.com.
Here in the Mojave Desert, animals have had millions of years to adapt to the harsh environment. But the lizard, he's going to die.
So we've been talking about character appeal, and now we're going to get into our main discussion for the movie Rango by Paramount. It was animated by Industrial Light and Magic.
Crunchy, creamy, cookie, candy, cupcake.
Rango is a lizard attempting to adapt to his surroundings.
Who exactly are you?
Name's Rango.
That's what I said!
He's trying to figure out what he's supposed to be, like most of us in life.
Hola. You ain't from round here, are you?
It's certainly nothing I've ever done before, any of us have ever done before.
Help! Open the door!
What's great about the way Gore Verbinski is directing this is that we're all on a stage.
Instead of motion capture, it's kind of emotion capture. Using the actors as a reference for the emotionally animated character.
Oh, now you get back on in there and you assert yourself, and I think you'll find the people of this here town to be surprisingly hospitable.
Thank you, Sheriff.
What? Not you again.
I stand corrected.
You raise your game because you're working with other people. It's more of a natural acting experience.
Make your move.
Ooh, you're good.
I think it just gives a bunch of grown-ups an opportunity to be silly.
What's he doing now?
I think it's a number two.
Johnny Depp is Rango.
Yay!
Rango!
Rango actually won the Oscar this year.
Woo!
And we'll be talking we'll be talking a little bit about why it did and if we agree with that. And
so what are you guys' first thoughts when you saw this or you saw trailers for it?
I wasn't really in the country when this came out, so I had not heard a word of it until I got home and we started talking about it on the podcast. So I was like, okay, I'm going to have to look this up. But as far as my first, when I saw the pictures of it, when I first saw like different billboards or anything of it, I thought, interesting. I didn't know what to think of it though.
And you're right, Chelsea, like Rango, this film has been kind of like lurking in the shadows during our podcast because we always mentioned it and it's one of the Oscars and you know, we talked about our favorite films and that's how it was for me. Like I would see previews and spots for it and I was like, I don't know if I want to see it. And then after talking to one of my animation professors, he had a lot of praise for it. And then we got on Netflix during a family vacation and I watched it one night on a portable DVD player in our travel trailer and it was good. Like it was cool. I was like, wow, Wild West animated film. And I tried to think about the last time they did a Wild West animated film. My first thought was Five Will Goes West.
True.
I think they did other ones.
Home on the Range.
There's Five Will Goes West. Yeah, there was Home on the Range. And do you remember the cartoon series, The Cowboys of Moo Mesa? They were literally no. Steers with guns in some steer town.
I remember a picture in my head just coming up. Yeah.
Yeah, there was an arcade game which was Boss, by the way. But other than that, I can't think of that many like Wild West themed or Wild West universe animated films.
Mm-mm.
This movie was creative because I liked how they kind of made up this miniature animal western world that was in the real world because there were cars and people like humans, but they had the town of Dirt, the iconic wild western town in this film. It was made up of a hodgepodge of a bunch of household items that kind of made up their miniature wild west world. And definitely another first impression I had when I was watching this was this is the first animated film by Industrial Light and Magic, the visual effects studio that George Lucas started when he worked on Star Wars. To me, it just looked different. Like, it was a different look, and this look of Rango is something we're going to be bringing up a lot during this episode. But that's one of my first impressions. I was like, this is totally different from anything I've ever seen in an animated film.
Yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence, the different look and feel of the film, and the fact that ILM was the company that produced it. They're a very high-end special effects company. You know, if you think Transformers, Star Wars, you know, they're masters of their craft, and especially they're masters at creating special effects that fit into the real world, that fit into live action. You know, so they're really good at kind of replicating life on a very exact mimicking sort of way and making it blend. So I definitely see that trend in this film because it feels real. Like there's certain parts which we'll talk about in a bit, but I feel like this could be part of the real world, but it's just slightly off that obviously it's not. But yeah, they did a great job in this movie.
I thought it was a fantastic job too. I liked how what you were saying, it looked really real, but it never got to that point where it's like not cartoony enough that it would like take you out of the story.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing I noticed, and it was kind of something I noticed a little too much, I think, was the presence of Johnny Depp in this film. And this movie played pretty heavily off of Johnny Depp because he was the central character, Rango. For me, Johnny Depp has a very strong presence in all of his films. I mean, it's kind of hard to debate that. I loved his dialogue. It was really funny at times. And okay, first quote. I like it when he's in the bar and he's like convincing everyone that he's Rango. He's like saying, I've seen all sorts of things. And he goes, you spent 3 days in a horse carcass living off your own juices. It'll change your mind.
It'll change your mind.
I loved it. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, yeah. His dialogue is there. Like, it's got such a strong presence and there's so much of it because he's, you know, he talks so fast because he's this, you know, fast thinking, sly chameleon. For me, it kind of got a little annoying in some parts, but for the most part, I enjoyed it. But I guess I just want to make a note that this was definitely like, oh, what do you call it in the movie industry when it was like they practically made this movie for this actor? I wouldn't go that far for Rango, but Johnny Depp has a huge presence in this film.
Yeah, I feel like he took up 80-90% of screen time and dialogue, and everyone else, yeah, they were there, but it was the Johnny Depp show for the most part.
Can you imagine the Johnny Depp show?
I didn't have a problem with Johnny Depp's presence, or as you say, too much of it, I guess. I don't feel like there were parts where I'm like, oh, this is Johnny Depp's voice. I noticed
seeing Johnny Depp, I kind of got lost in the character, so it didn't bother me as much. And I think that was kind of part of the character, that he was this like scatterbrained, frantic, skittish fellow, you know, so he's like all over the place, he's talking super fast, and that may have been one of the reasons you were kind of annoyed with it.
To be honest, I really didn't notice. Well, first off, I didn't even realize that it was Johnny Depp. I got the Redbox, and Redbox doesn't have like the picture or the like the names of the people on there, so I was like, okay, what is this? I just put it in and went with it. So I didn't have the mental picture of Johnny Depp in my mind when I was watching it, so it didn't bother me. Like, I didn't, there was nothing that came across as, this character is too much, there's too much of this character in here. I didn't have that in there. I just thought, wow, this little lizard is really, like, he's interesting.
What if Johnny Depp did voice acting during the Disney Renaissance, or during, you know, the golden age of Disney animated classics? What characters could you see Johnny Depp voicing for?
Well, I think if Johnny Depp were around back then, he would have been one of those Disney go-to guys, like Phil Harris or Jim Cummings, where you use them constantly throughout different things. I could see him as villains, clearly, and good guys. Probably, I could see him as Stromboli, the villain from Pinocchio.
Stromboli, really?
Yeah. Or like a Clayton from Tarzan, or on the good guy side, Clopin from Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Was he the jester?
Yeah, the goofy jester.
The fool guy,
You know, who sings. I could see him doing something like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know, it's just a little what if, just a little speculation.
Well, cool. Okay, so what did we like about Rango?
I love the atmosphere. The whole atmosphere of the film was like, just the lighting and the texturing, it just pointed towards a Wild West movie. Like, you had the glaring, blaring, bright desert, you know, that's all disorienting. And then you had kind of the dusty, low-light locales of the Wild West town of dirt. And then the outdoor scenes were really cool. The outdoor scenes were so, well, like you said, they were realistic. I was talking to some folks at work yesterday who really liked Rango, and I was like, why do you like Rango? And they were like, some of those outdoor scenes are so realistic that I thought they were real.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a huge strong point of this film, that has such a cool atmosphere. The character appeal in this film is very powerful, and the whole character design was super cool. What do y'all think?
Oh, for sure. Like, the armadillo, he was, for me, the moment where I was just like, oh, wow, things have really changed in the world of animation. Because we, you know, last time we just did Toy Story, which was the very first one, and thinking back from Toy Story to, you know, Rango, where you're just like, whoa! You look at the armadillo, and it's like every little thing, the hairs on his like mustache thing, like, just everything was so perfectly done that you just look at and think, could this, what the heck is this?
Yeah, I watched it, and there's one point where you sit there and you look at it, and I was kind of lost in it, because I was looking thinking, could that be real? Because that's pretty darn close. If that thing wasn't talking, I would think it was real.
Yeah, seriously. And going back to Toy Story, like, going back comparing it to the first animated films, like, there's a lot of fur going on in this film.
Yes.
You got like mottled, matty, nasty fur, and you've got like kind of brushed fur. Mm-hmm. And it fits the personality type. I think back on Scud, Sid's dog from Toy Story. Poor Scud, like, we're always berating him. I think we berated him in episode 5. Scud was like he didn't have much fur going on, and now, like, in today's movies, you've got so much detail going on, you know, with the fur effects. I'm looking at applying fur to 3D models right now, you know, studying 3D graphics. It's super complicated. And when you're animating, how you get the whole fur to flow and move with the wind or with the character's motions, it's super complicated. And you're right. This just shows that animation has gone such a long way.
One of my favorite quotes in this was at the kind of toward the end, where the mole is in the jail, and he's like, come here, son. I have to brush your fur. You have to look good when you go to meet your maker.
Yeah. I love those moles, man.
Just a funny little moment.
I don't know what it is about redneck cartoon characters, but I just love them. They hit the nail on the head with the voice on the old Robin Hood for Disney.
Oh, yeah.
But man, I love those mole people on Rango.
Oh, mole people.
And speaking of Rango himself, I really liked his character design. The first thing that stood out to me was that his face isn't symmetrical. Like, it's not. Like, he has one eye that's up higher than another. And I think it kind of supports his, like, his really wacky, kind of absurd nature, because he goes on with this like crazy fantasy about him being, you know, a notorious gunslinger or whatever. I just like it because it's like, okay, this protagonist, definitely no Macho Man.
How do you feel about Rango's kinked neck?
I didn't notice it that much, but I mean, it was a cool detail.
I noticed that. I was like, is that always that way?
Yeah.
That's just why he's the way he is.
Yeah.
He broke his neck and something went a little awry.
Yeah, probably. And going back, I love some of the effects they did with Rango. Like, I love how vulnerable they make him feel when he's like when he's out in the real world in the desert. He looks up at the sun and like he just shrivels real quick and his skin flies off. And then it happens again. Oh, I love that. I wasn't expecting it to do that twice. I really loved it.
I loved Beans, the girl lizard. She was so funny. Like, her little quirks of just her
defense mechanism.
Yeah, her defense mechanism.
It's a defense mechanism.
Everyone's like, yeah, some trigger didn't go switch on that. I was like, oh, pity. But her dialogue was great, too. Get your hands off my boots.
Oh, that's right.
She did a great job.
Yeah, I think one thing I really just loved about all the characters were how they took all the desert characters and just made them all their own. And there were so many different varieties of critters and creatures. Mm-hmm. You know, they used the Gila monster and then the rattlesnake and lizards and little chipmunks and squirrels. And I just thought it was really cool how they, when they would be animated and they'd move around, how they definitely had those characteristics of whatever critter they were. I don't know. I just kept, as it got on and I kept seeing more and more animals, I was excited for when a new character would be introduced because I'm like, ooh, what are they going to do next? Because there were always new ones. It wasn't like, oh, the whole town is lizards or half and half. There were a big array of all of them. It was really, really cool for me to see that and all the detail put into each one of them.
Yeah, and you make a really good point. This shows how much effort they put into this film. Not to rag on DreamWorks or anything, but Kung Fu Panda 2, like, they only have a few, like, species of animals running around in that universe. You know what I'm talking about? Like, the general populace of the Kung Fu Panda universe. You've got like, there's like rabbits, goats, pigs, and ducks, and that's pretty much it, you know. And then you have your main characters, you know, your cast and your supporting cast. So that's, yeah, I mean, I think it's safe to say everyone in the Town of Dirt looks unique and different.
They probably just had,
and Chelsea mentioned something, you know, how about the little Priscilla, little desert rat was so ugly. The bottom line for the character design is that everyone is super ugly in this film. Like, I can't think of a beautiful, like, ooh, pretty character in this film.
Yeah, it just adds to the reality of things. Like, these creatures aren't beautiful, and they're not supposed to be super appealing. They live in the desert, and they're starving and struggling.
Yeah, so of course they're going to be all mangy-looking. Critters. I like the word critters. It's a perfect way to describe all these
Got
characters.
Got that from Jesse. Come on, critters!
What?
You just got that.
Anyway.
Surround Stanley. You know, I think the mole guy, the mole chief, the guy we were talking about, how he was like really, really super ugly.
Yeah, I don't like that mole. I don't like those moles that have those dangly nose things. They gross me out.
Yeah.
Dude, his nose is the dangliest in this film.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that mole chief, man. Dangly nose.
I loved the music in this. It was so right up my alley. I don't think you guys realize it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Chelsea is all about country music and all about cowboys and cowboy films. So.
Exactly. Well, I loved when they brought out the Cool Clear Water song. That was really funny for me. I was like, nice, I've heard this song many
times. Oh, yeah, they're kind of, they're like weird dance thing that they do before they get their water for the week.
It was so funny, I thought. I mean, they prepped you a little bit beforehand. They said their strange rituals that they do every Wednesday before they get their water. But then he's like, is this normal civic behavior? I'm not sure. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Like clockwork.
You do pretty good, Priscilla.
Hey, thanks.
I liked the music. Besides the score, I liked the Rango theme that they play during the credits.
Rango.
And the DVD menu. It kind of reminds me of the that Black Eyed Peas song, you know, the... You know, I liked it too. Cause it's kind of, and I liked their hillbilly banjo version of March of the Valkyries when the mole people are chasing after our heroes.
Yeah,
there's nothing better than a good carefully placed banjo that really spices up the energy in a film.
Seriously, I liked it.
So when I think of this film, if I were to describe this movie to one word to my friends, I would say texture.
Texture. You know, it's just like looking at Rango's, like, skin alone. That's some really complex texturing. In animation, you use what's called a bump map. It's a scale of black to white and everything in between and all that implies. And the computer reads certain values like black as a texture dipping down and white as coming up, or vice versa. I can't really remember. So if you work on a gradient from white to gray to black and get all sorts of blendings of cool bumps and textures, and that's a bump map. It's not the 3D model is not actually that textured. It just gives the illusion of it based on what the computer's reading. But a displacement map, at least on Maya, the 3D program that we use, is it actually brings out that kind of texture in the 3D model. So I think they're displacement maps there on Rango and all the other characters. But yeah, that's just me being super technical. But yeah, Rango's texturing was really cool.
Even the sand and the dirt, they're just flying through particles everywhere. You look at the texture of wood, they just did so much that went into this. That was, like I said, one of the reasons where I just thought, wow, animation has really changed over the last 17 years, which is good to know.
Hey, imagine what it would have looked like if we would have watched this in HD or on Blu-ray.
Well, yeah.
Hello.
We did not. And even then, we noticed it. So that definitely, kind of the fact that we keep mentioning this, all the technical details and how awed and inspired we were by them, shows how worthy of it is on a technical level for everything that it's done. And one of the reasons that it won the Oscar, because it's not only a great story, but the animation itself and just the principles behind it are top-notch. Yeah. So you can't ask for anything better from your first full-length feature film.
Win the Oscar!
Yeah. Woohoo! So, they did have a lot of practice on a lot of other things, but hey, good for them.
Yeah, good for them.
So I really love the little mariachi owls. I thought they were so cute.
Yeah, I liked it. It was kind of like a musical interlude kind of thing throughout the film.
Yeah, it kind of made it seem like, because Rango, he's this thespian, he's all on, performing, and he's in this box and he's on a stage, and it kind of made it seem like that even more, like they were narrating him through the film. So it kind of, like, they were a step back, and it's like we were looking at them who were looking at him, if that makes sense at all. You know, the very beginning, I think there's two different times where Rango, he kind of, breathes on the glass and then makes the rectangle shape with his fingers, representing I'm boxed in, this is my stage. And, he's out in the real world, but at the same time, him being an actor, he's kind of closed in. But the owls, I thought they were great. They were so cute.
It had a remembrance of, like, the mice from Babe and the muses from Hercules with that mariachi twist.
Yeah, that's funny because the director, Gore Verbinski, he mentioned in an interview I was reading how they added these owls and they were kind of like the Greek muses or the Greek chorus that's in a lot of things. And immediately when I heard Greek chorus, I thought, Hercules.
There's even a part where they kind of broke that wall and Rango was like, and now we ride. And we're leaving now, so play something or something like that. And they start playing.
Oh, yeah.
The guy comes out with an electric guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that part was cool.
That was really funny.
I love those montages of them riding out to go get the water back. And it's like super like Western film, the exciting music.
It's, they're in the shadows and then there's the sunset in the background and they're just kind of going along. That's one of those moments where when I saw the use of the different characters and they were riding on roadrunners, I'm like, clever, like, clever.
Where are they, like, tying these roadrunners up?
The hitching post.
And then that gets into the whole thing with animated films, with which species of animals are beasts of burden and which ones are intelligent ones that wear clothes. Because if you look, there's a crow and there's a pigeon in their group, but they're riding on roadrunners.
Yes.
Hey.
So
dominant species.
Hey, I loved the crow, the Indian crow. It's like, oh, I'm going to put you in charge of all this because of your ingenuity. No offense.
Oh, yeah. He's like, so I see you're communing with the spirits. I'm molting. Means I'm ready to mate. I'll take note of that. They're talking, and all of a sudden the doctor guy comes up, and he's like, all right, which one of you needs an examination?
That was
and the
horrible.
Crow's like, awkward.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that kind of goes into the things that, let's go into our next, what things didn't we like about Rango?
Okay.
I thought that the humor at times was a bit low or vile, nasty, you could say.
Yeah. I mean, some of it, like, it has some super random funny moments, but some of those super funny random moments were, like you said, kind of vile and kind of poopy,
Yes. Yeah, they definitely were letting you know that, no, this isn't Disney. You know, I prefer to keep things clean, but, you know, not everyone does. And I was thinking, well, why do companies and filmmakers feel that they have to, like, push the limit and make it crude, distinguishing themselves by being, you know, by dirty jokes and stuff? I don't know. I always believe in the motto, keep it classy, but...
Classy never goes out of style.
Never. Yes, fashion goes out of style, but class never does. I was thinking about that, and I was reading an interview by the director, Gore Verbinski, and he helped clarify that. He said, essentially, that a lot of animation is seen as kids' movies, you know, and there's this filmmaker named Ralph Bakshi, and he directed a lot of adult-oriented animated films that were rated, like, X, probably. Wow. Some of the only, yeah. And so he's like, why aren't there more guys like that? And I'll read the quote. He says, we're all sitting here talking about family entertainment. Does animation have to be family entertainment? I think at that cost, yes. There's the bullseye you have to hit, but when you miss it a little bit and you do something interesting, the bullseye is going to move. Audiences want something new. They just can't articulate what. So his opinion is that animation has kind of fallen into this genre of being family films. Like, all animated films need to be a family film. And so if that was the case, if he was trying to push the boundaries of animation and make it a bit more adult-oriented, personally, I would have liked to have seen this movie just rated PG-13 to, like, make it very obvious.
Yeah.
What its purpose was. I mean, I liked it a lot, and, like, I'm obviously older than 13, and, you know, I can handle it or whatever, but I feel a lot of audiences were kind of confused, was thinking that it was a children's movie, and they were bringing 4, 5, 6-year-olds, and they were just kind of aghast at what they were seeing with all the dirty jokes and adult humor.
Yeah, there was dirty jokes and adult humor, and there's also some curse words, and that's a PG film. And
smoking.
Yeah,
and there was smoking.
Which was. I don't have a problem with smoking in films, you know, and children's, well, I don't know, whatever. But there was a lot of smoking in this film, and that was a big point.
Yeah.
That people were arguing that this should have been rated PG-13 because there was such long periods of characters smoking in it that it should have been bumped up. But it is what it is.
Oh, weird. I don't know about that. But they were like Wild West curse words, you know?
Oh, that makes it okay.
Apparently.
Okay, so yeah. What else didn't you like about Rango?
For me, the story was a little redundant. I'd kind of seen the whole plot formula before. You know what I mean?
Such as?
Okay, well, you take your protagonist who doesn't really know who he is, or he's less than he wants to be, and then he kind of makes up this lie with the help of an extraordinary circumstance.
True.
And his lie works for a while, catches up with him, and then he has to find out that he's the real hero. If you were thinking about Aladdin, I was actually talking about Rango.
Aladdin!
I'd seen it before. I mean, Bug's Life had it, you know, kind of with the...
Yeah.
Kind of the Three Amigos type of thing. And then, you know, with Aladdin, of course. And so I guess it's not, like, super prevalent, but to me it was just kind of like, oh, I've kind of seen it before. And those people that I talked to yesterday at my work who liked it so much, that was the one thing they had to complain about it, was the story was kind of... Well, you know, we've seen this before, so we kind of already know what's going to happen, you know. Mm-hmm. I think Johnny Depp's work as Rango made it a lot more colorful.
Yeah.
And made it more interesting. But the base backbone of the story was the same as Aladdin in Bug's Life, basically.
And the fact that, there were lots of things kind of like eye candy, like we mentioned, the animation and where it was set and the time period and all the characters that kind of didn't make you focus so much on just the simplicity of the story. Yeah, good point.
There were some plot holes for me. There were just a few of them that I was just thinking, I don't understand. What is that one? And, for example, throughout the whole thing, they're talking about, oh, you know, there's this water that keeps getting dumped into the desert. And I'm thinking, they never really, like, solved that, like, told you who was dumping the water exactly. I mean, it was just...
Was it the pipes?
Yeah.
Before, but they got rerouted?
I don't know. And, like, that's the thing. Like, you don't really know where that's coming from. And then also, they keep talking about, oh, it's such a bad thing that they're just dumping water. And yet, they they move the pipes and flood the entire city, and that's okay, and everyone's just like danced around. But still, it's there's just a few little things, and I'm just like, I don't understand what that point was, but whatever.
Yeah, one thing, I kind of got an anti-religion vibe from the film. It was pro-spirituality, but anti-religion with all the rituals and, you know, the dogma that's maybe associated with religion, per se. I felt like they kind of mocked religious rituals, you know, they were really kind of making fun of the townspeople getting together and doing their water dance or whatever they did. And then they go, and the whole time they're talking about the spirit of the West, who happens to be a Clint Eastwood clone directly, and he's, because Clint Eastwood was in a spaghetti western called Man with No Name, so he's a complete clone of that guy. But yeah, like, the spirit of the West is this infamous person that they're supposed to talk to and get answers from, and Rango goes, and essentially he says, I can't help you, you have to do it on your own. You know, and I kind of pictured that guy as the God figure, and then they kind of spun it and said, oh, you don't need God. You know, just figure it out yourself.
It was definitely, I would say it was neutral religious-wise. I mean, Spoons, he gives a prayer, but it's not a prayer to God. It's a prayer to the spirit of the West, who turns out to be Clint Eastwood riding a golf cart, you know. I didn't see the ridicule part of it. I think the whole ritual with getting the water and that, you know, crazy weird trance dance that they do, I think it was kind of meant to kind of emphasize, like, how weird and outlandish this town was.
Uh-huh.
And they did draw parallels to, like, a strong preacher presence. The Mayor Turtle gets up, talks about their salvation, and everybody's, like, cheering, you know, and getting real excited up on his stand. So I saw parallels to modern religion with that. I don't think it was mocking it, but it was probably a reference that fit with a Wild West theme that they wanted to go with.
Okay.
And I don't know. I mean, Spirit of the West was definitely modeled after Clint Eastwood. And I guess they just put the Oscar statues in the back to identify him, you know, just kind of hint. But yeah, you're right. It was kind of weird that he didn't go out and help Rango. It would have been cool if Clint Eastwood just walked up to Dirt, stepped on Rattlesnake Jake, stepped on the turtle, and just shot Rattlesnake Jake.
That would have been cool.
That would have been a good alternate ending. The special extended ending. Clint Eastwood, get off my lawn. He just shoots Rattlesnake Jake. Okay, I think this film should win an award for the most, like, random, wacky, like, ridiculous, humorous lines, especially from Rango. We've been talking about his character and Johnny Depp's work. Just some of the specific stuff that Rango says is ridiculous. Going back to the bar scene when he's, like, talking about himself, he goes, I see things make a grown man lose control of his glandular function. And he goes on to the horse thing. And it's just, like, some of the weird stuff he just says. Like, he's, like, making an autograph to some kid. He's like, now remember, son, stay in school, eat your veggies, burn everything but Shakespeare.
Who's Shakespeare?
That's right. And going into religion, he autographs someone's New Testament.
Oh, you want my John Hancock right here? All right.
Yeah. And he's talking about the water problem. He's like, all right, folks, stand back, clear the area. This is a crime scene now. Secure the perimeter, dust for prints, check for fiber, scan for DNA. I want a urine sample from everyone and get me a latte. Don't mix up the two.
Good quote.
So, yeah.
Some random things that I thought were really funny is at the very beginning when the armadillo is, like, telling him where he needs to go, you need to go find dirt, and then they'll be doing all this and this. Just follow your shadow, right? And so it shows him walking, and he's clearly walking contrary to the armadillo's request. And I was like, how is he ever going to get there? His shadow's not going that way.
Really?
He's like, wasn't following his shadow at that moment. The shadow was to, like, around 4 o'clock, and he was going, like, straight north, noon.
Straight noon.
Oh, shoot.
One thing that I think is funny now that I put the fact that it was Industrial Light and Magic who did this film, is the chase scene in the desert reminded me so much of the pod races in Episode 1, The Phantom Menace.
I like it. I love that. I love that canyon scene.
And there was something about right when all the moles family comes up and they're, like, in that circle, there's something about that little canyon area that really reminded me of Ben-Hur, like, as they're starting to do the chariot races right there. And it just made me go into the feeling of, yes, anything that happens in a desert really just has the makings of an epic adventure.
Because the desert's pretty awesome.
It is.
Yeah, it is pretty good. Huh. There's just something about deserts.
So what are the conundrums that you guys have in this movie? Questions that were not answered.
I got an unanswered question. You know, why was Tortoise John trying to control the water anyway? Like, was he the one controlling the water? I guess he was, because he's like, you control the water, you control everything. And you saw that he was trying to build this kind of little more modernized city. I guess that's what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
I couldn't really tell. Why didn't he just say, hey, look, everybody, I'm building a city and there's going to be lots of water. Everyone's invited, you know?
Yeah.
Why go through so much trouble to create this huge conspiracy?
Well, that's the thing. Like, was he building that city just for him and his golfing buddies? Or was eventually he was going to move everybody over to this nice city? I don't know. I think just the main thing, I mean, even though he was creating a better world, per se, that could have fit and suited everybody, it was more about the power. About power and suppression. So by suppressing the water and making the people weak, he was able to control them, have power over them.
Kind of like the bad side of big business kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, the thing I don't understand is, at that point, who's going to pay you to live in your little city if you're killing everyone? And everyone's leaving. Like, this doesn't make sense. Like, it's a business deal. He says, yes, it's just a business deal. But no, these people would be the ones that would pay you to live in this wonderful little city. Why are you being mean to them? Yeah. Why are you killing them all?
They'll pay because there's water, but then they won't be able to pay because they currently don't have water.
Yeah.
And he has an unlimited supply, so why does it matter to him?
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and another layer of this Mayor Tortoise John conundrum,
yes,
is that he was holding out on the water so that people would move out and sell their land to him because he needed the land for his city. But then all his city folk are gone because they sold their land and gone off to somewhere else. So you're right. He's lost all his potential customers, I guess, if he's hoping to capitalize on this big city.
Yeah, that's true. That reminds me of Home on the Range. Same plot point where the cowboy in Home on the Range, he's buying every part of Texas except for that. He owns it all except for the little patch of heaven.
Yeah.
You know, and that's his goal. He just needs that last one. And that's the same thing. It like parallels with this film. You know, he just needs Bean's property, just doing everything he can to get that last little bit. Okay, I have a little bit of trivia for you guys.
Okay.
So, Tortoise John, the mayor, he is voiced by a man named Ned Beatty. And this guy also voiced a villain for a Pixar film. Can you guess which one?
Which film or which villain?
Both.
I think I know. Was he, gosh, what's his name? Mr. Waterhorse or Mr. Watership
Water
Down?
Noose.
Mr. Water Noose on Monsters Incorporated?
Nope.
Good. He wasn't?
Good guess. Yeah.
Oh, shoot.
He wasn't on The Incredibles.
Nope.
He was Ned Beatty. He was, I know who he was.
Who?
Was he Muntz? Charles Muntz? On Up?
Nope. Here, I'll tell you, I'll give you a quote. One thing you gotta know about me, I'm a hugger.
Oh, Lotso Huggin' Bear.
Yep. Which they're kind
of. Lotso.
They're kind of the. Yeah, he was Lotso. And they're kind of the exact same character with same motives.
Yeah.
You know, trying to control the population.
He's done this before.
Yeah.
He's the go to guy for this specific villain.
Oh, sweet. That's pretty good. Wow, you got me on that one.
So, there's that one scene where Rango, they're like, what's your name? Who are you anyway? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Rango, he's like, oh, I can change who I am. I can change my identity. And he comes up with the name Rango. Like, what do you think his real name was before? Like, does it even matter?
Steve.
It was Salazar Slytherin.
Yeah.
I just think it's interesting that part's not even brought up, and we don't even get a glimpse of what his real identity is, other than he's like, he doesn't have one because he's an actor searching for an identity.
Yeah.
And then through this whole thing, he's acting and he's pretending, but he kind of comes into his own.
He becomes this person.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's significant that they didn't give him a name, because I don't think anyone would have remembered it unless he, you know, because he's only that persona at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
I think it also helps with the impact of when Rattlesnake Jake reveals that he's a phony.
Mm-hmm.
And Beans, when he's walking by Beans goes, you know, who are you? Rango doesn't answer. It's because, you know, he considers himself a nobody, and he kind of is a nobody at that point because we don't even get to hear his real name. So I think it does matter that they don't mention his real name.
I've always had the question of, where did he get that Hawaiian shirt?
Well, you know, it's always that weird thing with animated films about clothing on anthropomorphic, you know, animals. It's just some sort of, there's a fine line between who's naked and who's not.
Yep.
The roach was naked, but there's a spider who wears clothes in the town of dirt. I don't know. We'll have to go into the whole nude factor in cartoons. I'm just, I don't know. Maybe not. Yeah, you know how we said the Spirit of the West was modeled after Clint Eastwood? Rattlesnake Jake was modeled after Western star Lee Van Cleef, who was he was a villain in a couple of Western films. Just looking at his profile.
Rattlesnake Jake really creeped me out. His eyes reminded me of the Eye of Mordor.
True. Yeah, man, he was a hardcore character. I liked his gun too. It was like a
tail.
Yeah.
A rotary cannon. I know, and that's the most dangerous part of the rattlesnake at first, you know, because that's what kind of gives away that it's dangerous, I guess. Mm-hmm. He was in the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. He was in a bunch of Western films, this Lee Van Cleef guy. So I just thought it was cool because Rattlesnake Jake kind of had a little mustache going on, and I guess so did Van Cleef. And a lot of his...
That's funny. I didn't even notice that.
Well, he's got a mustache.
Yeah.
Another thing is the actors were given costumes and sets to help give them the feel of the Wild West while they were recording dialogue.
Yeah, I was watching a making of video, and it was really cool because it was definitely that part where they're doing their dance before the water at noon type of thing. You know, and it's really jerky and overly animated in their movements, and so it definitely gave the animators some reference, especially for Johnny Depp, for his character. I don't know, it was interesting, just because normally you don't hear the words on the set for an animated film.
Yeah.
And there was a girl I was listening to her interview, and she said, yeah, it was really cool on the set with Johnny Depp. I'm like, wait, what? Oh, yeah. They actually were on set.
Yeah, that's cool.
Earlier today, before we recorded, we tweeted from our Rotoscopers Twitter account, and we asked you guys the question, what is your favorite scene in Rango and why? And so we had an answer come back to us, woohoo, from Mahesh Pagar. So he said, his favorite part, he says, who exactly are you? Who am I? I could be anyone. And so that's Rango. And he says, I love that moment because Rango is born in that moment. And as an audience, we truly understand his solitude. The line itself has deeper meaning too. And for him, it becomes like a play where he has to play the role life as a stage.
I like
that. Yeah, it's a good point.
I like the theme that it brought into the whole thing, as you know, you are able to change your character. You're able to, even though at the beginning he really wasn't anyone, like we talked about, he had no name, he was just a no one, but he decided that I could be anyone, and so he just goes through and he creates his life. Mm-hmm. And it really is true. There's so many times where we feel like we're stuck in our old lives, but we're feel like we have to take that with us, but really we can change who we are, and we can move forward and be better and have more of an impact on people's lives.
Yeah, that reminds me, Lady Gaga's song, Born This Way, that's like the whole essence of it, that we are constantly like being reborn and can change who we are. That and definitely made me think of Rango, that we can change who we are, hopefully for the better, and we can constantly do that. It's not like I'm stuck in this person or my situation. I can change that and go forth. And then from there, I can change even more and more and more and more. So it's this progression. So I like that a lot. So thanks, comments. So next time we'll tweet again. And if you want to maybe be read on the air, make sure to tweet back. So guys, last but not least, what would you rate this film?
Oh, shoot. For me, it gets 4 stars because I like... The only thing that for me, let's just say this, the only thing that kept it from being 5 stars for me was kind of the crude humor throughout. But other than that, I mean, it's a beautiful film. It's got great atmosphere. Definitely not for your kids or young kids, I guess. And so, yeah, 4 stars for me.
Cool.
I think I'd give it 4 stars as well. I think just solely on the fact that it was amazingly done, the atmosphere, the animation quality just for me was definitely worth 4 stars. So I'll give it that as well.
Okay, I'm not copying you guys. I thought about this ahead of time, so just letting you know. I, too, am giving Rango 4 stars. Basically, it's an amazing movie. It's quite an achievement in animation as an art form. The story and the characters are really good. I appreciate Johnny Depp's depth as an actor and what he gives to the character Rango and kind of the messages it explores. It's good. It's not super original, like we said. We've kind of seen part of this before, and it was a bit predictable, but it was exciting, and I liked watching it, and I would watch it again. But still, a great movie. 4 stars is great. Don't get me wrong.
No, we won't.
All right. So we got 4 stars from me, 4 stars from Chelsea, 4 stars from Morgan. So that average is.
I think it's 4.
4?
No.
No. Okay. Fine. Go back to school. Get my math degree. And
4 stars all around. Well, great.
So we're just going to finish this up. We have our first mailbag segment.
Yay, mailbag!
Mail time!
Never fails. Oh, my goodness.
Look, it's a letter from our friend.
2 letters. In addition to the tweet we had 2 emails. So I just wanted to read them because they're kind of nice and they make us feel good. But they also apply to what we talked about. So on the website, we posted one of the commercials for Brave, and it was just a quick 30-second commercial. And one of our listeners, Kay, wanted to respond on the website, but for some reason the comment section wasn't working, so he emailed it. So I'm going to read it. So if you haven't seen this commercial, it's just go on the news for the rotoscopers, and it's Brave TV commercial number 2. So he went and saw the commercial. He said, "I'm so curious. The stone circle, the laws of the forest, the bear, the hare, what? It's like a soup whirl of icons and clues in my head. On my dad's farm, there's a spot where there's this circle of big oak trees. We call it the cathedral. You just know that long, long ago, the center once held the parent of the all. It's an amazing place to stand. The Bear and the Dark Spell, Brenda Chapman, co-author and first director of Brave and story artist on Beauty and the Beast. Any beasts there? And bloopers. I love the one at 33 seconds. Thanks for keeping us posted. I can't remember looking forward so much to a movie coming out."
Awesome.
That's from Kay.
And here's a letter from Jeff. He says, "I just finished listening to episode 5 on Toy Story. Great episode." Boy, thank you.
Thank you.
He says, "I'm a huge Pixar fan and have been waiting for you to review one of their films." Just a couple of fun comments he had. The letter A and then 113. You know how we talked about how it was in all the Pixar films? Mm-hmm. He says, "Not only does it show up in Pixar films, but in other animation and live action films. For example, it showed up a couple times in Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which was directed by Brad Bird, which I saw last week and I thought it was really good."
Awesome. It was.
Yeah. He says, about voices, Jeff says, "I think it's fun how many Pixarians voice characters in their films. Andrew Stanton, Joe Ranf, Jeff Pigeon, Craig Good, all voice characters in Toy Story. That would be a fun topic for a future episode." We have been talking a lot about voice acting. And he also had a comment regarding Woody's last name. Lee Unkrich stated it on his Twitter feed sometime back in 2009. Jeff says, "I don't remember if it was Chelsea or Morgan who found this information on the Pixar Wikia site, but the funny thing is I'm," that is Jeff, "involved with that site, so it was a bit weird and fun to hear you mention the site. I don't think the site gets a lot of notice, but it has a great group of contributors, and we are careful about only publishing factual info. So thanks for the mention." Jeff closes by saying, "Thanks for another great episode. Looking forward to another Pixar one."
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jeff.
Jeff.
I think that's awesome that he's a contributor to Pixar Wikia, because definitely before that episode, I was like all on that, and I'm always on that website all the time looking up little facts, and so it's kind of cool.
It's just a wonderful community that we're all sharing with everyone.
Yes, so... So thank you for writing in. If you have any questions, thoughts, concerns, rants about this episode, or things that we maybe have said correctly or incorrectly, or you just want to get your own opinion out there, send us an email, therotoscopers@gmail.com, or go to the website and click the Contact Us form, and we'll be sure to read it on the air.
Hey, thanks, guys, for joining us on yet another episode of the Rotoscopers podcast. As well, we also have our individual sites. You can go to the Facebook fan page of myself, Chelsea, and you can go to the Twitter feed of Morgan_Burt.
That's me.
And we also have the elusive Mason Smith, but someday you'll be able to find him. We're glad that you guys could join us on our nerdy nights, and make sure also check out audible.com. Great stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
And until next time, we are the Rotoscopers. Have a great week.
Happy trails to you.
Until we meet again. Welcome to the Rotoscopers Podcast, Episode 7, Rango, The Creepy Critters.
Creepy Critters.
Oh, dang it. It was another one of those time vortex I thought you were talking. You were actually talking like 10 seconds ago.
Time vortex. It's come back from episode one.
These things just follow
the
us.
Time vortex. The beast. The beast is going to come through my wall and just be like, where's the time vortex?
I look at it this way. Why are we doing this? For us.
For us.
I'm not doing this true. For anybody else but myself. They should have realized that we weren't taking ourselves seriously when we did Rock-a-Doodle as our third
episode. Before Pixar.
I know. I really hope there's not someone who's like analyzing this and is like, I would have put Pixar as one of my first films. Wait, what movie is this from? And I'm going to put on George Strait. I'm going to play it for the babies, because everybody knows that George Strait makes babies smarter. Which I kind of wish my parents would have done that, because half the time I don't know what anything is going on, or whatever. Oh, I ruined it.
Incredibles. Is it George Strait? I thought it was Mozart.
I know. I just said George Strait.
That's funny.
Or she's like a redneck, because half the time I can't tell what's going on.
Well, honey, I don't even know what's going on, but we're here, and I'm really glad that we were able to listen to some of this music, because it was right up my alley. I was very happy, you know, took me back to my Western redneck roots.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Boy, howdy.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, man. Ringo, man, go get me over there, man. Yeah.